The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network. Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, Nerdapalooza, the world's largest nerd music festival, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
I am Jim DeMonaco, songwriter for Kirby Crackle and the most handsome man in the universe.
My name is Kyle Stevens. I'm the lead singer guitar player for the Kirby Crackles, and I like you.
And you are listening to Nerdy Show.
Nerdy Show.
Can I walk here?
Welcome to Nerdy Show, a weekly podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we've got it covered. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hi, I'm Hex.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Colin.
And today we're going to talk about the summer blockbusters so far. For all you time travelers out there, it's middle of the summer 2011. This episode comes out July 1st.
2011.
We're
time travelers now.
Shit. Wait, why in the hell did I do that?
I don't know.
What the heck? Am I?
Is it Cap? Is it 2011 for you?
Which Cap do we have
I
here?
Think maybe that was the last time a year was important to me, and so I just stopped. Like, no, I just, you know, it's just you get older, you forget how old you even are, and I just stopped caring.
Well, okay.
Let me just read
every year you forgot your own age.
And weirdly enough,
that's when the accident happened. Was on that day.
I'm staring right at the Best of Orlando 2012. But that's the wrong year, too.
Since we're on the topic of time travelers, one of my life goals is to go in a crowded place dressed up like I'm from the 80s, run up to someone, just yell, "What year is it?" And then just go, "It's not too late," and just scamper off.
You could do the same thing if you're naked and you're doing the Terminator version.
See, I think there's a less chance of being arrested.
Right.
If you're dressed like you're from the 80s or dressed from 80s future.
Yeah, yeah.
Cap could do that. You've got the hair for it. You've got some new wave going on.
Sure. Yeah. Since we are discussing films, you can bet that there are spoilers here. Spoilers for what, you ask? Well, there's spoilers for Star Trek Into Darkness, World War Z, and Man of Steel. But if you haven't seen those films and you're ready to brave into spoiler territory nonetheless, we can guarantee you a good time. So this summer actually kicked off with a Nerdy Show episode. We caught a slightly early showing of Iron Man 3. We came right back to the studio and recorded an episode about it. Now, we're going to probably be talking about Iron Man 3 a little bit, just as a sort of a basis for comparison. But if you want our full opinions on Iron Man 3, then you should definitely look there, and we'll link to it on this episode's page.
I didn't get to chime in on my thoughts on Iron Man 3, and I basically loved it. I'm not saying that it's the best movie out there. I'm not saying it's the best Marvel movie out there, or even the best Iron Man, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I went to that movie, and I walked away smiling.
You're allowed to say it was the best Iron Man. Do you think it was the best Iron Man?
I don't think so.
No?
Like, I still really stand by Iron Man 1. Like, I love Don Cheadle as Rhodey. I think that was an amazing shift. And I loved so much what they did with the Mandarin in this. But I think it was a thoroughly enjoyable. I think I'd place it over Iron Man 2.
Well, everybody puts it over Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
I went in skeptical. Came out a believer again. I was like, every time I've doubted Marvel, they've proven me wrong, and I still haven't learned. I don't know why.
They really grabbed that whole, like, campy, not campy, but kind of like almost campy.
Well, it's just fun. It's
70
just joy.
Action film.
Yeah.
And you could really see that in the ending credits. In case you missed the memo, by the way,
mm-hmm.
we were a total send-off to, like, 70s action films. And it really...
Except they weren't.
Right.
It was so good. Such a fusion.
And I just really love the relationship Tony had with the kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot of people were like, "Oh, they brought a kid in." And I'm like, "Yeah, but did you watch the film? Like, did you see how they was very self-aware of the whole kid thing?"
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Wait, are you guilt tripping me? Yeah. So,
doesn't he call him a pussy at some point?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So overall, I enjoyed it.
Well, what about you, Colin? You also weren't on that episode.
I enjoyed Iron Man 3 a lot. The only issue that I really had with Iron Man 3 is that I don't think that they could decide whether or not his PTSD was funny or we should take it seriously. And that was my only issue with it, is that I was confused as an audience member as to whether or not it was a joke, because sometimes it was funny, and then other times the other characters on screen were like, oh, this is a real problem. And then it just, for me, just didn't make sense. So, because it needed to be one or the other for me,
personally. I actually 100% agree with Colin on this. That he was still
shocking. Stop the presses.
Well, I love that he was suffering from after.
Yes, I do. I think that was awesome. That was super cool.
Like, especially Tony, because he basically gazed into the abyss of space.
Right.
And
fell from the abyss of space.
Fell from the abyss of space and nearly died. And so he had to have some kind of reaction. And they showed that, and I thought they did it well, with the exception of the kind of bipolar feel of, is this funny or is this serious?
I think it struck a good balance because Tony took it seriously and the people around him took it seriously, but the audience was allowed to laugh at the situation that he was in, like when the kid doesn't understand what he's seeing, and he's just like, New York, you're not laughing at Tony's stress, you're laughing at the kid's misunderstanding of the situation.
That's true.
And it is kind of funny because, I mean, he did a very, very serious, very heroic thing. And if he was a real person, this would be like pretty momentous. But at the same time, he's Tony Stark. He's a man of science. And he's really struggling with how ridiculous it was. And that ridiculous in itself is like, wow, that happened to me. That's okay.
It just wasn't clear for me. It just wasn't clear. Mm-hmm. That's and because the other characters will give you, you know, they'll give you inference as to what you're supposed to, how to react and all that kind of stuff. And it was inconsistent as far as the characters are concerned on screen as well. So I don't know. That was otherwise I loved it. That was just the only thing that was just a little bit sticking in my craw.
I walked out of the theater loving it. Afterwards, I had a couple people point out like minor plot holes. But I think it's a telltale sign of a good movie when someone points out the minor plot holes and you just go, yeah, but it still kicked ass.
Exactly.
You
know,
it's like it doesn't bother me the slightest.
Agreed. And it's a really great, as far as, you know, post-Avengers, things could have gotten dicey there, but a heck of a great start to a post-Avengers Marvel-verse.
Heck of a start to a summer of movies.
I just rewatched Avengers last night because it's now on Netflix. And I was just remarking to Sophie how it's just so, I love it. Because it feels like all the other separate Marvel movies. They all kept this kind of same tone. And I love Iron Man 3 because it still has that same tone. It still feels like
Even though it's quote unquote scaled back from Avengers, it still feels like
it feels like it's the Marvel universe.
And it still feels big and threatening, even though you don't have all the Avengers or Thanos or something crazy happening.
Right. That's kind of my fear with DC movies, but we can get on that at another time.
Well, that was the thing. Well, Joss Whedon saw the ending of Iron Man 3 early and was like, well, what the fuck am I going to do now with Avengers 2? Because that was insane.
I like he's humble. I like it.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a ridiculous reaction for him to have, but hey, I mean, it was good, so so sure. But, you know, Thanos, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, excited.
Yeah, very excited. And if any unbelievers are out there, thinking, why the hell is Guardians gonna rock? Really check out Brian Michael Bendis's current Guardians of the Galaxy book. It's 4 issues in right now. By issue 3, you'll be thinking, oh yeah, this would be a really good movie.
Blam murdered you.
And Blam murdered you. So the next thing to happen is Star Trek Into Darkness. And so let's take a moment here and say that State of the Empire is coming soon. Mm. And this discussion will save us some time in the next State of the Empire, so we won't have to go into this in full. It was a thing. It was good ways.
I'll put it this way. Like, if you listen to the last State of the Empire, when we're talking like, oh, Star Trek Into Darkness is coming soon, I had like a lot of benefit of the doubt just because I enjoyed the first one. Like, I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I loved the first movie.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I thought, well, you know, they're bringing pretty much everybody back. There's like this mystery about who the villain's going to be. Like, they haven't really said it. And at the time, I gotta say, going into it, a lot of people, like, on, like, YouTube and IMDb and all, you know, and the people I know who aren't really big Star Trek fans, but just like the movie, they're like, I think it's gonna be Khan. Is it Khan? I think it's gonna be Khan. Because it'd be great to be Khan. I'm like, people, come on, it's not Khan. Because look at it. First of all, why would you do this, blah, 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 blah. So I go into the movie, and my personal experience was like, I'm watching the movie, I'm having fun. I'm waiting for it to really kind of kick it in to the big twist, to the big high gear thing. The big reveal happens that it is Khan, and I'm just sort of like, oh, you guys didn't. Why were you more original in the first film with your bad guy? And now you have even more freedom that you've set up a separate universe. You clearly state the fact no, things are different now. Whatever we were going to be no longer applies. And then we literally just try to remake the old films.
Like, yeah.
And while I had a fun time watching it, it just plain wasn't as good a movie as the first one. Mm-hmm. And it provides a very strange situation that, as far as I know, has never occurred before in film, where it's a sequel that's a remake.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
and but also a parallel universe at the same time. Like, it's a very complicated situation, because as filmmakers, they said, we want to do Wrath of Khan, mm-hmm. which makes it a remake, but it's a sequel to an alternate timeline,
right?
And then it's also aware of the existence of the original story.
When they new timeline Spock calls up old timeline Spock to be like, hey, how'd you deal with him in this movie, in your movie, to so I can deal with him in my movie? That was just, I, oh my God, I wanted to throw everything through the screen. It was just crap.
It was crap, but I didn't want to throw anything at my screen. And he says, old Spock, did you ever meet a man named Khan? And he says, yes. And I'm like, okay, well, what's he going to say? And he's just like, how did you deal with him? And he's like, I swore that I would never tell you anything about the future. And I'm like, good.
Good.
And he goes, but I'll make an exception in this case. I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, when leaving the theater.
Please pause here and watch Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. I mean, insert disc two. The fan edit should be the first whole half of Star Trek Into Darkness. And when he says, did you ever meet a man named Khan? And he's just like, yes. And he's like, how did you deal with him? Slow the Wayne's just wavy fade out into the beginning of Wrath of Khan, and then you just enjoy that film.
And here's the thing that really annoys me about it, because I'm still kind of blown away by how strange this arrangement of items is here. Like, because it's kind of crazy, like, that anybody thought this was a good idea, because it's complicated. It's really complicated.
Well, see, you're saying it's complicated. I think that is insinuating that there was a design involved, like, as opposed to just like, hey, look, we got to, you know what, throw Khan in there.
Everyone really likes Khan. Let's just put it in there.
Like, Khan's character development as a villain is based entirely on you having seen the original film.
Yes.
Because, or space seed at that.
Or because at that point that he says, well, like, pause here and watch Khan, that is really the place where all of his motivation as a villain is revealed, except it doesn't happen on screen. So if this is truly for the audiences, like the mainstream audiences that this movie is supposed to be for, because there's lots of explosions, what the fuck is going on?
Well, the thing, my first sign that something was weird and wrong was in the very, very, very beginning, when you're seeing the montage of that dad taking care of his daughter, and he's like upset, and he goes outside and he's looking at the balcony, and he's looking over the balcony, and then he hears a voice that's like, I can save her. And then he turns and he's like, who are you? And then it cuts to Benedict's face, and you just hear the of the soundtrack of, like, the strings playing this, like, terror sound, and it's just a dolly in on his face, and he doesn't say his name. And I'm like, well, that was a big, grand, evil sound, you know, like, for someone who I don't know. Like, you're acting like I should know who it is. Why should I know who this is when it's new? Please don't be Khan. And then, of course, you know, it gets to that point, and, like, he's jumping around, and, like, I don't know, like you said, it's like, oh, in order to get his
motivation,
you had to see Wrath of Khan. In Wrath of Khan, in order to get his motivation, you kind of needed to see Space Seed.
Yeah.
But that even didn't happen in this universe, so why is he a big bad villain, as far as I'm concerned? Like, what made him...
And if J.J. Abrams is not a Star Trek fan and doesn't really... And then where the hell is all this continuity coming from?
Yeah.
I mean, because just like the first film, this film goes deep with references.
Yeah.
Like, the...
Way more so than the first one.
The place that that Khan destroys, like, that is a... I'm going to screw this up. I wish Matt Spill was here. He's in Germany right now. He's our prime Star Trek, Star Wars, like, brain. He's our holocron. but for both. He was telling me all this crazy shit. That whole facility was something that was mentioned in DS9 that referenced back to, like... There's some, like, dialogue that's exchanged at some point where they're like... Section whatever, I've never heard of that. And they're like, you haven't heard of it. It's like, well, how long have you been there? It's like, we've always been there. And, like, this is proof that they have always been there.
Whoa.
Right.
Like, this is not only confirming, but building on the original Star Trek mythos. in some scenes. And like, and who's responsible for that shit?
JJ just directs it. He's like, if he's not that big of a Star Trek fan, I give him a little bit of a pass, because if he doesn't really know the mythology, if he doesn't really know the backstory,
No, he does not get a pass. He's a
I didn't say free pass. I just said he's getting a little bit of a pass.
No, he gets no pass. He's the director of a film for like this franchise that has like gone on for years and years and years with a huge fan following.
But the franchise,
Are going on about like the depth of this.
I agree.
Particular mythos.
But the franchise is rebooted.
No pass.
He reneged on his pass. With the first film, he said, no, we're starting over. We're doing a new thing. We're not referencing the old films with the exception of old Spock and like whatever. From here on out, we're going to be different.
Bullshit.
So no, it is bullshit. Because in the second film, like you pointed out, they heavily base everything on the old stuff.
Well,
so
the entire film is essentially fan service.
Exactly.
There's so much fan
insane. I'm completely agreeing with you, which is why it's messed up, which is why I think the second film fails.
No, and to continue on that, any pass that J.J. Abrams might have gotten, to me, completely is washed away over his directing of Benedict Cumberbatch. Because basically, he was like, hey, so just be Space Sherlock. That's what I want.
Well, I haven't seen Sherlock, so I don't know.
It's basically the exact same character. I know Benedict has more depth as an actor than just being this cold, calculating, merciless sociopath.
See, I can't compare his performance versus whatever, because this is like, honestly, this is like probably the first thing I've ever seen him in. But all I can do is compare the choices that they made versus the last film, and both of those together versus every other Star Trek ever made.
No, and I agree with that. I loved the first Star Trek because it was so different, because it was so
right,
so its own thing.
So when they say, all right, now we're going to bring in, like, so even if they decided to bring in Khan,
make it a completely different Khan.
Make it a completely different Khan, but kind of my problem was, like, if you're bringing in Khan, he was nothing like the first Khan. Because first you got, you know, Ricardo Montalban, super charismatic. Like, vain as hell, stronger than normal people, but he's not Spider-Man. Like, Benedict in this movie was Spider-Man. He was leaping off of things. He was throwing people in the air. He would hit somebody with a stick and they would go flying. And he had Wolverine's powers of regenerative properties.
Yeah.
Like, Khan was a man. He was a mortal man. Like, it's
the difference
between
a superhuman and like Captain America, where Captain America is just pushed to the limit of what
exactly. So I think what we're saying here is we just like just pick something.
Yeah.
Like if you're gonna like reboot the series, reboot the series. If you're gonna reference something that happened previously and you're gonna say that, oh well, all that stuff that happened did happen, but this is an alternate timeline.
Right.
Then stick to the original stuff and keep using it because it's good.
Right.
But don't like gloss it over and say, well, it didn't happen that way. But this is a separate universe, but it's the same universe. But it's like, well, make up your fucking mind, asshole. Right.
That was I would agree that the biggest problem is that they couldn't make up their mind whether they wanted the fan service of the original stuff or explore the new stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honest, if they just explore the new stuff, you know what would make the movie 10 times better? If there's a future fan edit where they just erase Khan's name from it and just give him a fancy name of like, my name is
Buster Black.
Yeah. You know, my name's Buster. And it's just like, Buster, Spock, old Spock, have you ever in your travels met someone named Buster?
Nope.
No. Click. You know, and then suddenly our heroes are on their own in territory that's unexplored.
You know what would really confuse me at the very, very end, where they're like, all right, we're about to embark on our 5-year mission. I'm like, I thought you guys were going to do this at the end of the first movie.
No, exactly. He's like, Spock, you know, permission to come aboard. And he comes in and he's just like, Bones, buckle up. Oh, here we go. Warp speed. And like, so where did they go?
I wasn't waiting for them to do that. Like, I didn't think that I needed to be told that they were going to go on their 5-year mission.
Right.
The first film ends with them being a crew.
Right.
They were twiddling their fucking thumbs.
And in the beginning, it's like Kirk and Spock, like everybody's character arc was the exact same character arc from the first film. It's like, we're supposed to be thrown together. Spock and I, we're supposed to be buddies, but we're still arguing over things. And I'm not really the captain. I'm not fit for the captain's chair. You're not ready, Kirk. Same thing in this one. It's just like, Kirk, we gave you the Enterprise. We're taking it away because you're not ready.
But you're still a first mate, so if anything happens to me, you're a captain again.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Dude, even in the beat for beat, it was the same exact film where even Christopher Pike visits him in a fucking bar and gives him a speech to go back to Starfleet and work you on know, the Enterprise.
I was in a bar when I told you this the first time.
It's like, yeah, I saw that movie. Let's see a different movie.
Well, and my complaint is, another complaint is that they have this diverse crew, this really awesome crew. They did not use them. Like, Uhura was a little bit...
Yeah, well,
Bones was barely there.
Scotty was pivotal, but it's like they kicked... He left the Enterprise. And I'm like, that's an interesting twist. Take Scotty off the Enterprise and show how they need him or whatever. But then, since Chekhov's got nothing to do whatsoever, let's put him down there to be like, Captain, the lithium warp drive, it's going crazy. I don't know exposition. And then that's all it was.
I don't really have the credentials for this. I should not be here.
Yeah,
and put me back on the ship, please. Yeah. I'm only 17.
He was an exposition machine, and like that was it.
Right. Captain, the ship isn't working. Why not? Because the plot says so.
Well, the exposition drive is overloaded.
and instead of doing something interesting with Chekhov being down there and Scotty being out there, they both become exposition machines. Right. Like, when you separate them from what they're supposed to do, you could do something new with it and take it somewhere different, but instead it's like, well, let's just have Scotty have a communicator, which suddenly can work across the galaxy now and has no range limits, right. and
cannot be picked up by people on the same frequency.
Yeah. And another thing, like, there's a million, I mean, we could go on about this whole thing for forever, but I gotta say, leaving the movie, I thought it was a thrill ride. It was exciting. It was very pretty. I laughed. You know, it did its job to entertain me. But as a Star Trek fan, I was very, very frustrated.
See, I walked away entertained, but not at the same level that I was with Iron Man 3, where
I agree,
the benefits did not outweigh the cost.
Because there was a certain amount of respect that just plain wasn't shown to the audience, because that not on purpose, but in large part because the creators couldn't make up their mind. Maybe it's because, you know, Damon Lindelof had his hand in the script, and he's all about screwing that up.
Or maybe there's just too many cooks in the kitchen. Yeah. Maybe there was just too many people messing with it. But I have to nerd rage, because this is a nerdy show. I have to nerd rage about a couple things.
Why the fuck was there a Tribble on that goddamn ship?
Because Tribbles are in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Why the fuck was there a Tribble on that goddamn starship?
People love Tribbles.
Oh, hey, let's just inject it with Khan blood just cause.
Yeah, because, you know, well, Tribble anatomy is very similar. They established in the old episodes that Tribble anatomy was almost identical to the way humans worked. The opening of the movie, they're on the volcano planet and they're doing the thing and, you know, whatever. The Enterprise is under the water. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And it's different. You know, it's different. Doing different things. Rises out of the water. It's very pretty. It's very cool. And they're flying over. It's like the dilemma was Spock is in the volcano. We can't beam him out because we need a direct line of sight to beam him out. And if we fly up above to get the direct line of sight, the native people are going to see us, and that violates the prime directive. People point out, well, hey, isn't being on the planet violation? I'm like, whatever, I'll let that slide because it's Star Trek, we got to have fun. Whenever they beam down on an away mission to do something with natives, and if they're trying to hide from the prime directive, where's the Enterprise during that time?
It's in space. Not underwater.
In geosynchronous orbit.
Now, in orbit, can the native population see the Enterprise?
No.
And in orbit, can you get a direct line of sight over a volcano?
Yes.
Why wasn't the Enterprise in orbit over that planet? Day one, book one of your Starfleet manual, how to get in standard orbit over an alien planet.
Doug, that's why he got brought back and was no longer the captain. You know, he didn't follow that page.
We're going under fucking water. It's like, Captain, just why? I mean, we could just stay up in space and conserve our energy.
It'll
look
cool when the water comes off the CG ship.
Also, it'll look cool when they swim a just completely inhuman depth to get inside of the giant little city-sized spacecraft. Yeah.
Also, okay, and the other thing, the magical box that transport you from Starfleet headquarters to Kronos, like all the way to the Klingon homeworld. Why do we need starships? if you can transport yourself from another planet to another planet across the galaxy, why do we need to build starships?
He's Khan, he's smart.
He's from 300 years ago, and he knows how to operate all of this. You know, like, thaw out the guy from 300 years ago and have him build a super starship. Well, sir, it's 300 years ago. What would he know? That's like me, like, thawing out one of the pilgrims who came over on the Mayflower and be like, can you help me build, a 2012?
Really awesome car?
You know what? Help me build the 2014 Corvette. Just, let's design it. I want your input.
Well, it needs more sails.
He's like, And he's more say, it's like, you know, you were clearly the captain of the Mayflower. You had the biggest buckle and, you know, and you were the strongest. People were stronger back then, right. Maybe a little bit shorter, but right. You know,
have you considered enslaving the Indians?
Honestly, the thing with that movie is just they were going so much with the fan service. But the problem was, is that you were talking about the fan edit. Honestly, I would have loved to see a fan edit where you would cut out maybe like 20 minutes of action scenes and about all of the stuff with the alternate villain being that other captain.
Yeah.
The Admiral Robocop. Or whatever it was. Like, I mean, like, why you have one of the greatest villains in movie history and you are just putting another villain on top of him. Why?
Yeah. Yeah. It was now I will say I had my doubts as soon as they say it's Khan. I was like, oh, crap. No. But then when they're like, hey, Kirk, work with me. We need to work together. I'm like, oh, are they going to be super ballsy and make like Khan a good guy? Like, are they going to, like, is that the twist for a minute, like when they're like diving into the other ship, like through the debris field, I was actually kind of pumped. I'm like, holy shit, Khan and Kirk being buddies. That's a totally different direction. Congrats, guys. Balls out choices. And then it's like, nope. No, I'm bad because I'm born that way.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm bad because
Lady Gaga.
Exactly. I'm bad because the story makes me bad, even though there's another villain that we're both trying to conquer.
Also, Klingon homeworld, what a cock tease. And we really need to cut to some songs here, guys.
Yeah, yeah, let's cut to some songs and then come back, because there's no way that we'll stop.
So, with that cock tease of Klingons, I felt that...
That you wanted to boldly go down
on
no, me.
I know, what? No. Well,
that's the name of the album.
Well, yeah, right. There's an album called Boldly Go Down on Me by Warp 11. An awesome and local sci-fi Star Trek themed band.
These guys are local to Orlando?
Not Orlando, but central Florida.
Okay. Are they going to be at Nerdapalooza?
Working on it.
Okay.
and so, yeah, they have a song called Kill, 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 Kill Klingons. And I thought it was appropriate because that's what happened in the movie. That was the most exciting part. It's like, oh, Klingons! And yeah. They're getting killed.
You guys should definitely check out this band. They have a lot of records. They have a lot of hilarious sounding titles. We play them on Nerdy FM at nerdy.fm, where you can listen to nerd music streaming 24/7. If you didn't know about that, that's probably where you're going to want to spend most of your time now. Mm-hmm. and we'll of course link to them, but definitely check them out. These guys, if you want Star Trek rock and roll, look
this
no further.
This is the place to go.
if I were you.
So the Klingons, is it me or did their redesign? They looked a lot more like penises.
I kind of like the redesign.
I don't know.
I believe that.
They were like, they were like smooth skin, baby face. Like, I feel like if Worf saw these guys, like, what are you, milk drinker? Like, what are you? Like, what human fucked your mom? You know, like, they don't look like
the idea that a Klingon insult is milk drinker.
Yeah. The look is whatever. It's superficial. It doesn't really make a difference. So I really have no right to really rage about it because they're redesigning pretty much everything. I just thought it was timid and not bold.
Like the armor and stuff. That was cool.
Yeah, I like the armor. But
the
armor
moment
was,
they took off the armor, like, oh.
They're like, oh, you just look like a... So wait, you were doing huge, cool redesigns for armor and ships and everything. But when you... Let's see the Klingon face. And I'm down for something new. I'm down for something different, but...
Here's my ideal version of this film.
Peter, Wrath of Khan is your ideal version of that film. <It's> like,
this is a different film. They're doing their own thing.
Peter Weller says, all right, well, I want to start a war on Klingon. Mm. So he doesn't even fuck around with this weird escort trip that Kirk was totally going to screw up for him. Yeah. I mean, let's not... Mm-hmm. He put years and years of covert planning in the hands of someone who is not in his organization. You're an idiot. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he just does it. He's like, war with the Klingons? Let's incite it. Let's make it happen.
Yep.
So he does. And he incites a crazy war with the Klingons, which becomes the defining event for this new Star Trek universe.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
They destroyed Vulcan last film. Let's go have a full-blown motherfucking war with the Klingons.
Cut out Khan entirely and make the villain just... Or make it a mystery where it's like, wait a minute, this is a conspiracy. No one's going to believe us. We're way out here by whatever. We can stop the war if we act in time. They don't act in time. The war begins. Into darkness, the war begins.
Boom!
Like, why not?
Yeah.
That's it. That's what I want.
That would be better.
And it'd be interesting instead, because the whole thing of Star Trek is that there are these uneasy alliances. They're trying to stop war with the Romulans and the Klingons this entire time. Well, they messed up. So now they have to deal with the consequences of war.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting Star Trek.
And Kirk has to rise to the occasion as a captain after that. It's one thing to be captain during peacetime and be like, ah, fuck it, we're going right. Come on, Spock, we're going around.
But it's also different.
We go banging ladies and just have some fun, ride with the top down. And now it's like, well, shit, we're at war. So... No more fun. And
it's interesting because Kirk has that chip on his shoulder about Klingons because Klingons killed his father. But in this universe, they didn't. Yeah. So he doesn't have a beef with the Klingons now.
Right.
So,
no, it wasn't personal, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So he would be more interested in being...
In stopping the war. Yeah.
Right. And being the peace talker. The diplomatic Kirk would be an interesting Kirk to watch.
I just don't want
to
watch this Kirk anymore. I'm exhausted. The first film was okay.
They made him different. They just repeated the first film. Yeah. Like, I was like the launching point. If they started this new film with the way that last film ended, he would be a different Kirk and he'd be a little bit more reserved, a little bit more commanding, a little bit more, you know, whatever. And it would have been interesting, but instead it was the exact same Kirk from the beginning of the last one, bar fighting, brawling.
Where it doesn't feel like an away mission.
Talking.
It feels like a frat prank.
Speaking in State of the Empire terms, honestly, this didn't make me feel very good about episode 7.
Yeah, it gave me a little bit of worry. But again, I put more faith in Michael Arndt as a writer than JJ as a director.
Yeah.
But we'll save the rest of that for them because that will go on for forever about that.
Yeah. And we really should move on to something.
Yeah, let's leave Star Trek behind. It's
Doug, you've seen World War Z.
Yes. Yeah.
I haven't seen World War Z yet. I'm actually pretty interested in seeing World War Z.
I am an individual who is on the fence.
Okay.
What I have heard about World War Z is that originally when this film was pitched, Brad Pitt and his production company was interested in actually creating a World War Z movie that was truly based on the book and actually filming the World War Z book, and then they couldn't get anybody to buy it. So they took it to a larger studio who ended up purchasing it, and now the World War Z that we have is what became of that, and so it is nothing like the book, is at least that's what I've heard.
Okay. Well, I'll give you guys the rundown on my experience, because I'm a huge fan of the book, huge fan of Zombie Survival Guide.
Max Brooks, good
guy. Yeah, I'm a huge Max Brooks fan. but not a traditional zombie movie fan. Like, I like the original Dawn of the Dead, but the others, you know, movies in general, I have a problem with fast moving zombies just because I think it's dumb. My suspension of disbelief for the slow moving zombies, for whatever reason, that fills that gap. It works. I think once they start running fast, I start asking more questions like, where do they get the energy? Is the flesh that they're eating power their muscles? Like,
is there some friction that's breaking them down faster?
Exactly.
Are they not actually dead?
Yeah, that's all these things I start asking. 28 days later, they say they're not really dead. Solves that problem. I get it. Anyway, so with World War Z, I was hesitant. I wasn't really that interested. I like Brad Pitt. You know, he makes cool decisions. But my family said, hey, well, let's all go out and see World War Z. And I'm like, all right. So we go, and immediately I'm just like, it's not going to be like the book, you know, whatever. I got to say, it was I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was really? It was a pleasant surprise. This is coming from a guy who's diehard about the book. And right. I know a lot of other people who say they're diehards about the book, and they're like, it was nothing like the book whatsoever. There's a lot of the book in this movie, surprisingly so. Like, the trailers don't really show you a lot of what else goes on. I will say that the movie is not a direct interpretation of the book. It's more like a prequel to the book about how the war begins. Mm. The book is about, like, looking back after the war has ended. This is more of, like, your experience from Brad Pitt's point of view, how the war begins, what's really going on. And the way it's like the book is that he works for the UN and they need him to go from location to location to location, interviewing certain people, figuring out, is there a cure? Can we stop this thing? And the places where he goes follow the mythos that's created in World War Z. Like in the Middle East, they, you know, I won't spoil, but like there's scenes where they are trying to let people in through the wall and stuff. And they have these cages where there's dogs smelling the people, just like in the book. They're insinuating that maybe it came from somewhere in Asia. They're not quite sure where. I just left the theater being like, that was so different from what I expected. And at the same time, different enough from the book that I didn't know what was going to happen. Similar enough to the book that as a fan, I felt satisfied. Acting was great. The special effects were really cool. I thought the zombies crawling over each other was going to be kind of a cheesy, you know, one note thing. But they relate it to like how the virus spreads like an organism. It's almost like there's no hive mind by any stretch of the means. They're all individuals, but the way they move are like ants climbing up one another, right. Just, you know, completely created a whole new dynamic, unique sort of action scenes that happened. And it followed the rules of zombies very strictly, with the exception of them running. The running I got used to because they utilized it differently than most other running zombie films that I've seen.
Anybody that I've spoken to has actually really enjoyed this film, whether or not they are book readers or not. Even the layman's enjoy this movie.
I knew that the movie was going to be a big crowd pleaser when, as we walk out of the movie, my dad, my Uncle Jeff, and my sister, we all went to go see
it. Was Hex's Aunt Nancy, was she there?
Oh, I didn't see Aunt Nancy.
She wasn't there? Okay.
No. Hexena? Was Hexena there?
But anyway,
I will destroy both of you.
But anyway, everybody walked out of there thinking it was great. And for the first time, I was able to have a true nerd discussion about zombies with the older male relatives of my family.
Wow. That's cool.
Where they would be like, no, wait a minute. How does that thing work? I'd be like, actually, guys, it works this way. If you cut off someone's hand and they're bit in the hand, are they still going to get infected? Well, if you work fast enough, because it has to go through the bloodstream. And they were having these like legit, you know, nerd out discussions about this. Like, well, what if like the winter freezes over? That's true. They would freeze, you know, and they're like, but wait, could a zombie swim? No, it lacks the coordination to swim or climb ladders. But that's why they had to climb each other. You know, it's really getting in depth. And it was a lot of fun. So it sparked a lot of good conversation. I heard later that they reshot Act 3 completely.
Yes. And it went way over budget as a result. This movie cost $190 million, I believe.
Now, I didn't know that until after I saw the film. And I thought it felt seamless. Like, there were things that happened in the end that are referenced in the beginning.
In fact, they brought Lindelof in to write that ending, I've heard.
Okay. Interesting.
Why do they keep doing this? Why?
He's a hit machine, please, Colin.
Just take him and put him away and put him in chains in a room and bury it.
All I'm saying is that the end felt inevitable. I heard that the original ending had something to do with a big battle in Russia. And now it's like just a small footnote at the very, very end where they mention, oh, yeah, by the way, there's a fight going on in Russia. And it's like, oh, interesting. But I don't know. It was good. It had a beginning, middle, and end. There were character arcs. It's not the greatest movie that was ever made, but it's definitely the best zombie film out of like the last five, you know?
Originally, the director said that they saw World War Z as being a trilogy, and that was shelved when the production trouble happened. Mm-hmm. However, the opening was successful, though it hasn't yet made back its money.
Mm-hmm.
So Paramount announced that they are going ahead with the sequel.
I'm actually excited to hear that. Because you know, I went in very skeptical, very, you know, cynical, rather I should say. I was cynical about it, and after leaving, I'm like, I would love to see another film with that same kind of tension, the same kind of action. I recommend it. It and Iron Man 3 are my movies of the summer.
You have pushed me from on the fence to interested.
Yeah, yeah. Interested is a good way to go. Because if you go in being like, well, Dark Star, that's going to be great. So if it's not the best movie ever,
then whatever.
But I'd say if I had to bet whether or not you would enjoy it as a human being, I would bet you would enjoy it.
Okay.
As opposed to what?
I like enjoying things.
As opposed to the Klingons in the new Trek or...
Say Tribbles Superman.
Or Superman. Or if you're an alien from another planet like Superman. So yeah. Now this will be interesting because I did not see Superman.
Oh, this is interesting. J. Michael Straczynski is credited for the story of World War Z. Wonder how that factors in. Weird.
Whoa.
Yeah. Really? It's a pretty big name.
Wow.
Yeah. Weird. Anyway, yeah, Superman.
Mm-hmm. Man of Steel.
I've heard a couple of people say they refer to it as Meh of Steel. Is that accurate?
Or it could be Man of Stool.
Meh of Stool.
Meh of Stool.
Anyway. Here's the thing about Man of Steel. Opinions were heated. I was watching my Facebook feed, and it was people loving it and people hating it. There was no middle ground whatsoever, and that freaked me out. I was kind of like, Jesus, I don't want to see it.
That's kind of why I've avoided it.
Yeah. I don't want to have an opinion about this. People are no good. Mm-hmm. But then I saw it, and after having seen the film, like I was, whatever. And then when I got to talking about it, then I realized just how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
It's rage worthy. It's just insulting. It's in a world where Marvel gets it right so hard. This film is just a shame. It is a shame and a sham.
Mm-hmm.
Hex, you've seen it?
Yes.
He's just staring off in the distance, like longing for better days of Superman.
In brief, Man of Steel is a...
Without briefs, this time around.
Is an adaptation of the first two Richard Donner films. A poor adaptation of them, smushed together, using absolutely no auxiliary Superman source material whatsoever.
Yeah. Mm.
So they took two films... 30 years old that are cheesy today but totally worked at the time and are still very good for what they are, and they attempted to mash that up with Christopher Nolan and his stylings and created a monster.
Christopher Nolan, as far as I was aware, hasn't done much to publicize his involvement with the film at all.
Yeah.
It's really been just sort of like, Christopher Nolan, please help us with Superman. And Christopher Nolan has said in the past, look, I don't want to do Superman. I just don't want to do it. Please just let us put your name on it. Here's $200 million. Will you be producer?
Ugh. Well, okay.
Fine. You know.
Story by Christopher Nolan and David S. Goyer.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, here's a story by Doug Banks. How about we do the origin story of Superman and General Zod shows up and they have a fight. There, I'm a producer. Give me my $200 million. Christopher Nolan did the exact same thing.
Screenplay by Goyer. You know, like Nolan's number two guy.
I really like David Goyer, but, you know, I'll defend him. But in this case, saying just because David Goyer write it doesn't mean it's going to be a smash hit. He also did Blade 3.
Right. Well, basically... I think that this film was held back by a lot of things, and I think that it was probably a nightmare working with Warner Bros. Because they want to manufacture a hit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They see Superman as untapped potential, money in the bank, a sure thing. We can get this right, no problem. I think that no one should have touched a Superman movie until the DC film canon was really well established.
Agreed. Yeah, yeah.
Personally, I think that they need to leave Nolan's trilogy behind.
Yeah,
it was its own thing. It was totally self-contained, and there's no way that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's Robin-y character is going to take up the mantle of Batman successfully. He's just not cut out for it, and really, no one wants to see that.
And also, just leave a perfect ending perfect.
I don't see how he could fit into a Justice League. Why he would even fucking care.
Yeah.
It's like, no, Gotham is so fucking corrupt, so horrible.
Yeah.
I need to be here.
Which is, you know, it felt like they're trying to make a Justice League movie based on Nolan's Batman.
Yeah.
And not rebooting everything, just start a whole new DC universe. Well,
okay, so my biggest gripe with Man of Steel is the fight. The fight that completely pulverizes Metropolis, because it's basically two men duking it out, and the place is turned to complete dust.
Mm.
Like, the entire city is dust. Meanwhile, a fucking marauding army is held off by five fucking people in Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, those three blocks are taken care of because they fucking contained it. They actually worked to contain the fight.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Superman is like, I don't fucking care. I'm just going to punch you through the Chrysler Building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of how it'd be.
Yeah, the thing about this one, though, is that actually what's funny is that what's polarizing so much about this film is that a lot of people were all about the fight. And honestly, like, yeah. I think that some of the fight scenes in this movie are things that we've never seen before, like the flying around and going through things. I honestly, when he first punched Superman through the, like, when they were in Smallville and they were blowing through all those buildings, I was like, oh, shit, we're going to go all the way the fuck around the world. That's going to be cool. Didn't happen. Well, no, but like, well, you know what I mean? Like, that sort of stuff could have been cool, but it's just like Superman on a super scale for the fight. That stuff was interesting, but I don't get the fact where half of the movie is a fight when it's an origin story and there's no origin to be heard of.
It's why this film is just so overcomplicated. To put things in perspective for you, Doug, you know, rehash the origin story of Krypton. It's kind of different. There's this weird ass plot device. They weave the origin story in and out of the film. Mm-hmm. And that part is mostly pretty good. Most of those scenes are pretty good.
All the flashbacks on Earth.
Yeah, the flashbacks are great.
I really like watching a young Clark come to grips with his powers.
I take issue with Jonathan Kent's martyrdom.
That right there, I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
Because why the fuck would he sacrifice himself to run back for a dog and fight like a tornado when he's like, because of the nature of tornadoes, Clark could have hidden under the car. Look, I'm okay. The tornado missed me. Because tornadoes fucking do that.
That's because Batman lost his parents, and so now Superman needs to lose his parents and be guilty because it's the only reason anybody becomes a hero.
The biggest thing that I gather from people who've seen it is, on a technical aspect, the fight, whatever, or even just the special effects themselves, they look good, it was fun, whatever, but it turned Superman into some guy who's just like an angry alien who punches things.
Right.
It was more of just like, I don't know my place, and I'm angry because I don't know who I am or where I'm from. But
and that is punctuated at the very end. When General Zod says, you have to kill me to stop me, and Superman went, well, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's actually a huge thing that a lot of people have been talking about, because Nolan was like, no, we can't have him do this. And Snyder was like, no, we have to.
And not that Superman has a strict no-killing policy. And reasons are what's
the thing. If there is a character in comics for 75 years, you can count the number of times he's killed on two hands.
Right.
And that's including all the video games.
And you know, it's different when you kill a monster or a computer that can speak. You know,
right.
It's different. It's different when you kill a man, you know, and in a savage, brutal way.
Well, and the thing that's just really just absurd about most of what's happening in the film, Superman doesn't have any time to establish himself as Superman because, I don't know, they're like embarrassed or something. They even shy away from saying the word Superman for a very long time.
Yeah.
As seen in the trailer. So he shows up on the scene at the site of a war that's caused exclusively because of his presence. There's no reason for the world to trust him. There's no reason for the world to like him. And you can sure as hell bet that they're going to cash in on this fallout in the sequel. But just setting it up for the sequel isn't an excuse for...
to make a first movie.
Yeah. A film where Superman doesn't ever have a chance on screen to breathe as the character and have any kind of interaction with the world as the character.
And this goes back to what I was going to say, is that people, when I said people have a positive reaction to the technical aspect and whatever, everybody else says, well, the one complaint, he wasn't really heroic. Like, he didn't really save anybody, you know?
Except
like,
for Lois.
Correct me if I'm wrong, because I didn't see the movie, but like, during all these building collapses, was there anyone who was just like, my baby? And he's like, hold on! And he stops the fight for a split second to catch a baby.
In fact, they actually go out of their way to take all this time for human drama that he doesn't get involved with at all. You just see Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White, like, saving his coworkers, and Superman does nothing.
So Perry White's the hero of the story. Superman's just the angry tantrum-throwing, you know.
Is basically what I walked away with.
Right.
At the very end, the military, like, they have drones following Superman. Is like, you know what? You should stop it. And I'm like, no. Why the fuck should they trust you?
So you're saying this would have been a better standalone Hulk movie than the Superman movie?
Well, the Hulk movies, both Hulk movies were more universally likable than this film.
But I mean, it's like the aspect of a guy who, I'm angry, no one understands me, punch, city gets destroyed, I'm not trying to save people.
That, like, that has more passion in it than what happens on screen with Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about Superman, and you know, harkening back to what you were kind of talking about before, like, you know, saving Superman a little bit, that I think that people don't realize how difficult of a character Superman is.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally am not a huge Superman fan because to me, he's too powerful. He's got like way too much shit going on. He can fly, he can jump over, he's super strong, X-ray eyes, he can fucking blow shit up with his eyes and shit like that, all sorts of stuff. It's like a little kid came up with Superman, like of all the powers that you just tack on as a child. child mm-hmm. of my hero can beat up your hero.
That is kind of what happened.
That is kind of what happened.
And I can't get behind somebody who's like, oh, and then their one weakness is like, you know, the kryptonite stuff. But it's just like, what's his foil? What's going to bring him down? What makes him not boring?
See, and you hit on an excellent point, because even though I'm a huge Superman fan, I'm an even bigger Superman fan because of the original Richard Donner films. Even though I love those films, even they didn't get Superman quite right. That was the best for the time, and it was the best for putting it into a movie for mainstream audiences. But in today's modern society of films and everything else, should Superman be self-acknowledging the Jesus references, since we as an audience acknowledge that he's an alien?
To me, that is poor Superman writing. It is so easy to write Superman as a messianic figure.
Yeah,
I think that the best Superman, the universally considered greatest version of Superman for not just a modern audience, but any audience, is Superman as a science hero, as a very science fiction-y, he lives in a sparkling futuristic
almost
city.
Almost pulpy.
It is pulpy. If you, like, really the golden go-to source material for it is Grant Morrison, Frank Quitely's All-Star Superman.
Mm-hmm.
It's sensational. It's,
I would even touch the animated series.
Yeah, well, that too.
Because I'm not as familiar with that one. But it's
along the same lines.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, he fights robots and deals with weird science problems, and he's so over the top and he's so powerful. Like, they needed Brainiac in this movie. They needed mm-hmm. a villain that was complex and interesting. I mean, like, Zod's great, but they didn't get to spend enough time with Zod to make him a good character, because they smushed Superman's origin movie into the Zod movie.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, they had the two other supporting people in Zod's army, Feora and the big dumb one. All the characters were in there, and they didn't do anything with them because they didn't have time.
When Superman is punching Zod in the new film, and, you know, it's like last 20 minutes or whatever, do they bleed at all? Is it like a bone breaking?
No.
How does he kill him?
He snaps his neck.
But why does that kill him?
That's a good question.
Like, if I'm punching you, nothing happens, and I twist your neck just a little too far, that will kill you?
Yeah. Apparently.
Apparently, that's also a weakness for Superman. So take note, Brainiac and Darkseid, that if you're fighting Superman, he's weak against kryptonite, he's weak against magic, and slightly rotating his neck to the left.
I don't know, man. There's so much about this movie that doesn't work and isn't well thought out enough that it's just broken. It's a broken, hollow. It's a hollow experience. It's just worthless.
Well, it's just, I heard people say, like, it just lacks joy.
Yeah.
Which is, like, to me, the core of Superman is, like, you gotta have fun. Like, Iron Man, fun. Batman, fun in a different way.
You know, the money's been great so far, but the response has been pretty bleak. Unless they're the people who love it, and I don't understand. And this is a good time to mention that there's a Flame On Microsode coming out, and Eric does love this film. And I haven't really gotten into it with him. I don't know why he loves it, so I look forward
to
hearing.
It's not a crime to like the movie.
No.
He's seen it several times.
Good. I'm genuinely glad he enjoys it. I'm just saying,
I'd like
it's
to know
not
why.
Superman. It's just not my Superman.
Yeah, I'd like to know why, too, because I do not get it, and it's killing me. It's like Warner Brothers. I often associate the failings of DC with a bunch of middle management from up on high from them, and... Yeah. I they don't get it. They don't understand that they need to start with a film like Blade and work their way up to a film like X-Men, and then start with a film like Spider-Man.
Agreed.
I'd say they're already halfway there. If they just made a plan that stretched beyond the simple, we gotta make Justice League and other movies. Like, that's all that's ever come out.
Animated movies, they're doing great. For the animated shows, they're doing great. They're putting the cart before the horse.
Like,
for the movies, all they've ever done is Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
They
did Green Lantern.
And Green Lantern. And, like, I, as a massive Green Lantern fan, I ignore that for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Man of Steel made more than the Avengers did on its opening day, they have already shifted the Justice League production into a higher gear. And I've heard some things. I don't know how legit they are because, you know, everything changes in Hollywood. Things get weird. I have heard that they are, in fact, approaching Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Harry Cavill, the Superman. And surprisingly enough, Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, Jesus.
It's sort of like a let's ignore what we didn't like about the Green Lantern movie and move forward. And I'm fine with him being Green Lantern, but this is real.
I still need to be introduced to at least Wonder Woman.
They're being approached.
Or the Flash or Aquaman.
Well, they're doing a Wonder Woman television series where she's in high school. Oh, so great. God. Yay.
So how many times have they tried to do a Wonder Woman TV series and it fail? Like what, 3 times now?
It's bad, man. I mean, I hear okay things about Arrow, but I don't fucking know.
I gave it a shot and it was just another TV show.
The one saving grace is Guillermo del Toro's doing the Justice League Dark movie. So if you
what's the Justice League Dark movie?
Justice League Dark.
Holy shit!
Is if it goes by the comic books, it's John Constantine and Swamp Thing and Madame Xanadu and Dead Man and
live action film.
Oh. I want if it's Del Toro, then I'm already buying my ticket right now.
Yeah, it could be quite good.
Like their Guardians of the Galaxy response.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's what it is being directly perceived as.
Oh my god!
Marvel's got a team of weird characters, so we can do that too.
I'm okay with if this is the team they're choosing.
But they're doing this before they even have Justice League movie, Wonder Woman movie.
With Marvel, everything is planned out. Why are they doing Guardians of the Galaxy with this wacky team?
Because they planned it 6 years
ago. Because they need to have Thanos established as a villain. Mm-hmm. Thanos is cosmic. Cosmic can't just randomly jump in. I mean, it's hinted at with Avengers, but the fact of actually establishing him as a villain with Guardians of the Galaxy, that's brilliant. It's introducing all these really fun, kooky characters and building a villain for Avengers 2.
I just think Warner Brothers is impatient.
I do too.
They want the Avengers movie now.
But I cannot see the Nolanverse, the New Metropolis, Coast City from Green Lantern being in the same world.
No way.
I think they are planning to ignore the previous film because the Green Lantern film flat out cannot exist in the same world as these two movies.
Because there was an alien invasion that happened there and there's no reference to it in any of the other films.
And aesthetically, Superman and Batman are similar enough that they could
theoretically
mesh.
But it's like, well, I mean, you know, once again,
Christopher Nolan loves like that certain kind of 90s metropolitan building architecture and it's chock full of that.
Yeah,
Man of Steel can be a good movie that stands on its own. It makes your money, do whatever, but if you're going to be serious about a Justice League movie, you got to establish a definite tone. Do a new Batman. Reintroduce Batman. Don't do an origin story. Just reintroduce
everyone
a new tone for
knows
Batman.
The Batman story.
Everyone knows Batman. Everyone knows Superman. Or go, if you're super gutsy, which I know you're not, go for Wonder Woman or The Flash. Set the tone with one of those movies. Slowly bring them in other, you know, on top of that. And until eventually you work your way back around to Superman, work your way back around to Batman. But save them for last because people love them the most. I don't know. I just feel like at the end of the day, they're caring more about getting the movie out there as fast as they can, collecting on the money, and just fueling this machine to keep it going for as long as possible. It's like superhero movies are now, they're the new big genre. Like, I'm trying to think of another movie genre that was a flash in the pan that happened really quick, that there was a million of them. And
fantasy films in the 80s.
Yeah, fantasy films in the 80s, cowboy movies in the 50s
vampire
and 60s.
Movies.
Disaster movies in the 60s and 70s.
In the 90s.
And
in the 90s. It's going to be the same thing. They're not looking at it in the long term, whereas Marvel is its own comic studio and movie studio.
And
they're looking for the end of time. They want to keep making this stuff. They're,
right.
Whereas Warner Brothers is like, let's ride the gravy train until it runs out.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, because that's the way it used to be. Let's fast track this script so that we can get in on this like disaster thing, because this one disaster film was really great.
It's not going to last forever.
So let's just do it. You know, so it's just like, I agree with you. They are just fast tracking all this stuff to get it out when they're not really having a thought out plan, which Marvel clearly has.
Now, there is one movie coming out that has both Batman and Superman that I'm looking forward to. Yeah. And I was not expecting it. Cap knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
What is this?
There's a microsode coming out about Legos. And
this
microsode, if you're a sort of person who listens to all of Nerdy Show, awesome. And know that this Lego episode is now somewhat obsolete because the Lego movie has been announced and the trailer's out. And we were in this episode being like, what the hell is this Lego movie on Wikipedia? What the fuck is this going to be?
I knew they were working on it and I thought I'm like, this is dumb. Lego movie.
Yep.
What the hell?
And then
the trailer drops and I'm like,
get it.
Oh shit. Like, this is aware of itself. It was aware of its audience, and it was just going for it.
Yeah. I mean, it looks fun. I mean, like, the Lego games are really well known. It's that same kind of humor.
Right.
Will Arnett is Batman. I'm like, I was like, that sounds dumb. And then I seem like, hey, you know, maybe it's pretty good.
Now, so what's the title of this? The Lego movie?
Yeah.
Colin, you haven't seen this?
No, I haven't. Oh, I'll check it out.
Yeah, the trailer
look up the trailer and let's hear your reaction to the trailer.
Oh, God. Oh, it's a Warner Bros. Film.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. Like, how come the Lego people get it?
And Lego does Marvel and DC now. So, what?
What? This looks awesome. What? Michelangelo.
I know, right?
Morgan Freeman. Will Arnett is Batman. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
I only work in black and sometimes very, very dark gray.
He won me over with that line.
It's yeah.
What the fuck? Who is this girl at the end? Does anybody know who that is?
It's just one of the characters, I guess.
Okay. I just didn't know if it was a
sexy Lego girl.
Yeah.
Her blocks are so elegantly painted.
Look at them straight lines. But like, now what? Now why?
That looks fucking awesome.
Why does that look so awesome? And it's a Warner Brothers movie with all those superheroes in it, and it's like awesome. But yet, Green Lantern's what we get. Man of Steel's what we get.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
We got to move on. Hex, what do you got for us?
So I thought an appropriate track would be originally by I Fight Dragons, their track No One Likes Superman Anymore. Hmm. This is an acoustic cover by our good pal, Shay O'Reilly. I'm pretty sure we played it before. However, it's just so damn appropriate with our thoughts from this movie.
Yeah.
Play it again, Hex.
Strong hands, strong mind, strong all the time, straightforward and kind, too simply defined. No one wants to know the man who stands for things we outgrow. He's too noble and too blind. We're all older now, and we don't need someone to care about the innocence we left behind. Don't touch that dial. It's just that goodness is out of style. Be dark, be cold. No hand to hold. Dark night, bright soul. No room here for the bold. No one wants to know the man who stands for things we outgrow. He's too noble and too blind. We're all old now, and we don't need someone to care about the innocence we've left behind. And what if he can fly? Hey, well, so can I. JetBlue or United Airways. And what if he is strong? Always sees the wrong we've done, reflected in his eyes. No one wants to know the man who stands for things we outgrow. He's too noble and too blind.
All right, so we're gonna close this out, but first we gotta give some mad props to some cool people, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about what's yet to come in the summer. June has ended, and as of this recording, I don't have the final tallies. You guys pushed us over our monthly support goal, so thank you very much. Woo. That means that the network can survive again, and Nerdy
Yay.
Show and all the other shows.
We didn't die.
Can continue to exist.
Month to month.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a little month to month.
It's a new month. It's new support perks. We've got a compilation of outtakes from our big post-Heroes Con interview-heavy comics episode we did. We got some outtakes featuring the whole group of people who were writing all the Green Lantern books now, and Rob Venditti. It's a good selection of outtakes. That's what's in store for you for new supporters in July. And if you help us pass our goal, then there'll be something else. So we got to give props to Anna Barich, who said, "Great work as always, fellas. Your E3 coverage got me more excited about upcoming games than any of my other news sources."
All right.
That's wow. Pretty cool.
Yay.
Big Bad Shadow Man said, $5 for the new Ghostbusters episode.
All right.
A little bit of a Wolfman.
Oh, there's a little bit of Wolfman in everybody. I
Tolan said a wild donation appeared.
That's good. That's good. Is that for Pokeballs by chance?
Well, no. Maybe he realized somehow that we recorded a new Pokeball.
You're trying to send you a message.
Antique Zimmer sent us some love, and Twomper said, "Nerdy folk, I just realized I haven't thrown any money at you fine people recently, and that's really a shame. Here's some walking around money. You earned it, sweet thing."
Oh.
I'm assuming this earns me a microsode, and he assumed right. But let's be honest, you've got a backlog 50 plus deep. You don't need me gumming up the works anymore. So in lieu of a new microsode, I'd very much appreciate it if you could instead expand my forthcoming microsode, Nerdy Show Season 1 Retcon, by a few minutes.
Ooh.
I understand that herding that many cats around one recording time is difficult, so might as well take advantage of the opportunity, right? Conclusively, Twomper. And yeah, you're right. It's actually weirdly hard to get Brian Clevenger and Aaron on the same show. But nonetheless, it will be so, and we will double the length of that microsode.
Booyah.
It's been a long time coming. You know, every time you guys push us over $100 limit, you earn a microsode. We are many microsodes deep, but don't worry. We have plans for neutralizing these in fun, creative, and very exciting and entertaining ways. Give us time and keep giving us your money and keep giving. And keep,
we're doing keep, better.
We
with
want
the
we want your time, your money, and your undying love.
I mean, is that too much to ask?
Well, and we'll keep giving you awesome microsodes. It'll happen. Keep giving us the suggestions, and we'll keep doling them out. Yet to go in this summer, the big ones. We got Lone Ranger, Pacific Rim, Wolverine, Elysium, and Kick-Ass 2. Lone Ranger, I am somewhat interested. I love Gore Verbinski. He's a really, like, his movies are really fun.
I will say, the thing that might give me a little bit of an interest in it was that he did very good with Rango.
Yeah, Rango was incredible.
Rango was
phenomenal.
And it was, like, a Western. Like, it really paid homage to some good stuff. So maybe when he get free reign to do a real Western, maybe it's pretty good.
I just really am not interested in seeing Johnny Depp be a Native American.
He almost got trampled to death by his horse.
He is part Native American, and that, even still, I'm still very uncomfortable by him portraying a wacky Native American.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel...
Here's the thing. Is it going to be a wacky Native American that's insulting, or is it just that he's different? I've gotten mixed things from the trailer, but I have a little bit of faith that it's that he's not going to be the wacky, crazy, like, "Oh, I'm funny. Laugh at me. Laugh at my funny voice." It's more of just like he is doing his own thing, and he just sort of happens to.
I don't think the character is outright disrespectful, but it's just like it would be nice. There are no shortage of Native American actors, I'm sure.
Yeah,
some of them probably as talented as Johnny Depp, and I'm sorry that they're not a big name like Johnny Depp, but you know, whatever.
I'm kind of on the same wavelength as that.
I understand that. Yeah, it's true.
And it's big enough that I just don't care enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm also tired of Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp being in the same film. Yeah. I'm just tired.
I mean,
he's
aware of it. He made a joke about it in Life's Too Short, but it's not changing anything.
It's not really his fault. I mean, like, it's money. Tell the directors and producers to stop doing it.
I don't know. Maybe it is his fault.
It comes out on July 3rd.
July 3rd.
Okay. So,
hey, Shredder's in this movie.
Colonel Shredder's in this movie?
No, Butch Cavendish, William Fichtner, or however you pronounce his name. Shredder in the new Michael Bay film.
Oh, God.
He's in this.
No. He's not playing Shredder. He's not Asian. He's playing Colonel Shredder. God, that movie is going to be such an abortion.
He is playing Uroko Saki. That is who he's playing. It's like what? It's like we're complaining about Johnny Depp playing Native American. He got this guy playing Uroko Saki. No. It's I was worried about Jake Gyllenhaal playing a Prince of Persia, but he did okay.
So then Pacific Rim. Pretty excited about that.
Cannot overstate how excited I am for this.
I'm reserved excitement is the best I can
Giant. It's actually got, there's some rumbling on it though, because a lot of people are, the marketing departments are having some issues with it because apparently it's not hitting well with mainstream audiences, is because people are like, oh, it's just a, you know, Transformers Japanese thing. Giants, you know, monster Transformer, you know, it's basically Transformers versus Godzilla. So people aren't really into it as much as they really should be because the marketing has all just been like just a big like fight essentially. So right. A lot of people are, I hope that it gets good reviews so people go out and see it.
There's so much about that movie that is like not being shown in the trailers, I get the impression.
Right.
Anyway, we'll see. It's Guillermo del Toro. He's really yet to steer anybody wrong.
So. Right. Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes. And our giant monster episode is forthcoming. I apologize. It's been a busy, busy time. It's been hard for me to finalize the damn thing. Wolverine.
You know what? Despite...
Cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
Cautiously optimistic.
From everything I've seen, like despite the previous Wolverine movie.
Each successive trailer has gotten me more and more interested.
Right. It's like Marvel went, oh, okay. We actually see where
but
we went wrong.
It's not Marvel. We gotta stop. It is
really?
Yeah. They don't have the Wolverines and the X-Men's.
This is 20th Century Fox.
So yeah. I guess they actually paid attention to the...
Well, the thing is that the companies that actually were successfully ruining the Marvel films, Fantastic Four, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, Punisher 2, those companies realized from the success of Marvel working independently that they needed to wise the fuck up. Otherwise, they would be burying the properties that they're spending so much money and going out of their way to make sure that they contractually can hold on to.
Right.
So I think they've probably ponied up with this one. They've probably talked to Marvel. They probably said, hey, we don't want to make a bad movie. You don't want Wolverine to look bad. Let's make a good movie.
Yeah, they had Aronofsky attached to it for the longest time before he had to move on because of time, you know, schedule conflicts or whatever. But it looks pretty good. I mean, got my hopes, you know, moderately high.
I agree with y'all. Mm-hmm. Cautiously optimistic.
We'll have to just wait and see is the best we could say.
I guess. Based off of how people talk about it, I may see it in the theaters. Pacific Rim, definitely going to see that in the theaters.
Elysium.
Oh, Elysium.
I am intrigued.
Matt Damon sci-fi.
Yeah.
With Jodie Foster as seemingly antagonist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have hopes for that one. That looks really good.
It has my curiosity.
To me.
Like, it actually feels a little bit like, here's Neuromancer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Like the ending of Neuromancer of breaking into this space.
I actually
paradise.
Had that same thought when I saw the trailer the first time. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, where they got that from? Something we forgot to mention, actually, is Oblivion. We gave a review of that in our previous State of the Empire.
Yeah. Oh, that's
that,
right.
That actually was a qualifier as possibly one of the summer blockbusters. And I'm hoping that Elysium will wash the taste of Oblivion out of my mouth.
Oh, and on that same note with Oblivion, there's also After Earth, which was supposed to be a summer blockbuster. But it was...
Ooh... Yeah. Not even Will Smith could save it.
Yeah, man. When Will Smith can't save your movie.
Yeah.
Oof.
That's M. Night, man.
I think it's I didn't, about to say, many people didn't know this, and even I didn't know it until the day it was released. It was Midnight Shenanigans, director of that movie.
I believe it.
When you have to hide your director's name, it's like maybe you should have picked someone else. Like
I'm hoping people are finally realizing that, like, he isn't Sixth Sense anymore.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
A lot of failure since then.
I want to know what happened, but I don't even...
He just accidentally made a really good movie.
He accidentally made two of them in a row.
I really liked Unbreakable.
I liked Unbreakable too, yeah. I liked it as well.
And I'm a fan of The Village, actually, so...
The Village is interesting. But yeah, Unbreakable, like, I didn't see that in the theaters because it was not advertised properly.
I remember them saying that there might have been a sequel and maybe a part three to Unbreakable where Bruce Willis, he's got to go out and do his superhero thing. I was like, I was pumped, but then they just like, I didn't make enough money. I'm like, God damn it. And then after that, it was...
If they had said once in the trailer, comics.
Right.
I would have been interested, but they didn't say that at all.
Right.
If it came out now, it would have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally. You know what? Why not, man? These sequels that, you know, based on past franchises.
I would love to see an Unbreakable sequel just come out of nowhere.
I just don't want to see Shyamalan direct it.
No.
I just don't want to see him touch it. But if they could get someone else involved, you bring back Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis, you got my money.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think whoever makes that movie could afford them, though, at this point.
Maybe. We'll see.
And then finally, Kick-Ass 2. Cannot wait.
I'm interested that Jim Carrey has revoked his support of the film.
Well, Jim Carrey's...
Wait, what?
Yeah, no. To clarify, Jim Carrey basically said he will not be doing any publicity for it because in the wake of the shootings that have been happening, like Sandy Hook and stuff, he feels like he cannot voice support for a movie that is so violent.
But, okay, well, here's what I heard. I heard dude actually sought out the role.
Might have. No, I'm talking, like, that was before. Yeah. This is now.
That's stupid.
It's a little, I mean, I can understand where he's coming from, but he's just, it's, you know, maybe people, he's just thinking too much with his heart.
If people are going to go out and see the film, then they're not going to have a problem with, they're not going to draw, that's a weird conclusion.
No one's going to blame Jim Carrey for, you know.
Right.
All the same, he looks amazing in it.
Yeah.
And I Kick-Ass 2 and Hit Girl, both the comics, like the Hit Girl miniseries and Kick-Ass 2, they're so much more than the first volume of Kick-Ass, like. I love those books, and I cannot wait to see them combine into this film.
I didn't read any of the books. I saw the film when it came out, just because it was, you know, very popular. I had fun. It didn't blow me away, but, you know, it depends on the reviews. If fans of the first movie in the comics like the second movie, maybe I'll go check it out.
I'm kind of on the fence on this, on whether or not I'll see it in the theaters, honestly. I might see it. I'm leaning towards maybe, but...
Anything else, or is Kick-Ass?
Kick-Ass ends the summer.
Word. Well, that's it.
We'll see if we will reconvene and do another one of these. And
Hopefully we can't wait. It'll be so exciting.
Yeah.
We gotta get in the studio and do this right away.
We'll hit you back with more movie stuff in the future, and there's, of course, more awesome Nerdy Show stuff coming out. Some of it I can't really talk about just yet, but we'll tell you as soon as we can.
Yeah!
You know what? Fuck it. Let me tell you guys what we're doing. At the end of July, we're staging something that we've been planning for a very long time. It's called Nerdy Show Live, and you may have seen that branding. We've had it for quite a while. Well, we actually have a show called Nerdy Show Live, and what it is, it's a episode of Nerdy Show like you've never seen or heard before, filmed in front of a live studio audience at the Geekeasy, the bar in the back of a comic shop in Orlando, Florida. We're either going to be recording it the 26th or 27th. We'll have information posted as soon as we can. So if you plan on being in the Orlando, Florida area on July 26th or 27th, or you would like to plan to be on one of those dates, we will be recording Nerdy Show Live at the Geekeasy. If you are going to be in town or are now making plans to be in town, just go ahead and email info@nerdyshow.com and we will set aside a seat for you, because there's limited space available. What's going to happen there? Well, it's going to be the fun Nerdy Show discussions that you know and love, and also some kind of crazy stuff that can really only be done with a bunch of willing participants and visual stimuli. It's not quite a talk show, it's not quite a British-style panel show, and it's not quite a game show. It's a Nerdy Show. So hold on to your butts. But it'll be awesome. So yeah, chat with us on the forums. We got a Nerdy Show wiki if you guys are obsessive about us. Then that's the good place to get obsessive. Tell us some things we don't even know about ourselves.
You keep better track of us than we do.
Paranoia. If you haven't checked out our Paranoia XP RPG one shot, totally should check that out.
It was funny. I liked it.
We had this support drive, and fans requested that we play the Paranoia role playing system for a one shot, and we did, and it turned out fantastic. So,
yay!
Paranoia.
To take us out, what I have is a new track from Frontalot's album that came out last year called Solved. This track is All Form the Head in celebration of Giant Robots.
Cool.
With Pacific Rim. This features Zealous One and Dr. Awkward. It is a pretty fun track. There was recently a music video made from a Kickstarter that was successful, so we'll link to the music video.
Sweet. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Hex.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Colin.
Let's form the head.
Colored robotic space rhinoceri that we pilot. Why? Cause they're in survive. Plus, we heed the cry of our planet's population to defend them. We report to battle stations, split screen ready, and our rhinos are rocket ships with fully articulated tusk jaws and hips. They come equipped with individual special attacks, none with a lack, but a couple a little bit slack. I'm not naming any pilot specifically, but we're all color coded, so you notice that typically I, in the gold, lead the charge, do the most damage to whatever. Very giant space invader. Peter managed to threaten the globe in yet another of our episodes. This week, malevolent galactic nematode. Already beat up the squad when we faced him. I'm calling it, let's form a giant robot and waste him. Monster misbehaving, planets needing saving, situations craving, I'll form the head. The enemy is clever, we're smaller but whatever. When we put it together, I'll form the head. Y'all could do the treading, swing energy machete. If combination's ready, I'll form the head. I'll form the head, I'll form the head. I'll form the head, I'll form the head. Deuce Pink, what I tell you last time? Got my agent on the phone, watch it with the worm slime. And watch a star shine, focus in your cameras. Cause it's a damn crime being so glamorous. Now panic, yeah, the shot of the supreme. Mr. Coy's rhino bought them, my lackey team. You got the Nimrod with the yellow laser beam. The other guy's no talker when he wants to talk to me. Between scenes, sometimes I feel out of place. Oh yeah, I'm the biggest damn star in outer space. Dear fans, I am powered by your flattery. The little old me, not the diva or the daiquiri. Back on track, team, and if you require me to show some early whites, I'll remind you why you hired me. There's no rivalry, just me. Instead, I'll be back in 15, just in time to form the head. Monster misbehaving, planets needing saving, situations craving, I'll form the head. The enemy is clever, we're smaller but whatever. When we put it together, I'll form the head. Y'all can do the treading, swing energy machete. If combination's ready, I'll form the head. I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head. Am I the only one who's finding this peculiar? That fighting giant aliens is getting too familiar, and it's bad enough. And just my luck, my body's light as red. But do we always have to argue over who should form the head? NASA trained, I'm only overlooked cause I'm the nice guy. I'm overqualified, I've logged 6 months of flight time. Astrophysicist, but still there's no respect for me. The golden boy and Coys couldn't spell the word trajectory. Now they got me face to face and fighting with some fish bait. 10 minutes left, we'll never finish at this rate. We need a plan, rerunning through other enemies. But every battle has 2 minute breaks within the memory. All these giant insects, they put the world in jeopardy. I remember Megamoth as if it happened yesterday. Think it's time that we combine and rip this thing to shreds. But only if you promise me that I can form the head. Monster misbehaving, planets needing saving, situations craving, I'll form the head. The enemy is clever, we're smaller but whatever. When we put it together, I'll form the head. Y'all can do the treading, swing energy machete. If combination's ready, I'll form the head. I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head.
Pink, turquoise, stick together, some say. Ultra mega fauna only clicks together one way. If that is apocryphal, might offer you turns up top. Where the view's at, you can look stern. While we pose so menacingly, brandishing blade, about to rid us of the enemy with one swoop. Yay! Not now, time's critical, don't debate this again. Oops, that space worm gobbled up Michigan. Monster misbehaving, planets needing saving, situations craving, I'll form the head. The enemy is clever, we're smaller but whatever. When we put it together, I'll form the head. Y'all could do the treading, swing energy machete. If combination's ready, I'll form the head. I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head. Monster misbehaving, planets needing saving, situations craving, I'll form the head. The enemy is clever, we're smaller but whatever. When we put it together, I'll form the head. Y'all can do the treading, swing energy machete. If combination's ready, I'll form the head. I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head, I'll form the head.
Thanks for listening to Nerdy Show. Nerdy Show is made possible by a comic shop, Nerdapalooza, the generous support of sexy listeners like you. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating and reviewing us on iTunes, making a contribution to our monthly support drive, or just making sweet, sweet love. Any extra-sized contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show audio and images.
Oh!
And lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in.
Oh!
For more episodes of Nerdy Show, as well as other fine, fine programming, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. you can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store. And for the latest news, follow us on all of your favorite sexy social networks.
All the gin joints in all the world, Chris Pike had to walk into mine.